were just talking about the theories of gravity.
Yeah.
How they are
found. Oh, yeah.
Theories of gravity. This is magnetics, and underground water sources.
Magnetics?
Yeah.
All right. I'll just jump in. Because I just got here and hey, that way I'm neutral. But all right, so I'm glad you brought up this thing about the Tibetan monks and this sort of thing, because what's interesting to me, as is usually interesting about this kind of post-structuralist utilization of the other, is that there's all this other without a kind of an object. What I mean is that you've got these autistic kids, you know, and everyone's looking for perceptual differences in these autistic children. Very similar to the, like, you make that link between the autistic kids and the Tibetan guys, right? Yeah. And so there's this
completely different field too.
No, it's at the same time, it's part of the kind of it's part of the same sort of like rationalist flaw of like, let's find an other. See how they think differently, and then explain it, you know. And it's interesting to me that she uses this. I don't know. Who's the author? Is it she or he? She. But how she uses this, like, it's a really safe other, autistic kids, because you know the autistic community is not out there like saying, "What do you mean? Looking at the way we like? Why are you studying the way we
can't
perceive things?" But
so.
You know. And it's in a really similar kind of way that, you know, people find these at this point now, we've found all these various safe others, you know, autistic kids, Tibetan monks, guys who don't get out a lot, you know. And
unless you're Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
You don't pick on retards.
But it's exactly that sort of thing where we're going to look for the perceptual differences in this other or that other. And all of it is coping with the same issue, which is this kind of crisis of modernity, right? Where all of a sudden we realize that our cities are porous, our spaces are flexible, and the borders keep moving, that your city is really different than my city, that if you, even in a place like Beijing, I was here like maybe a year and a half ago, it's just a very, very different city, you know, and people really are unhappy with that sort of, with that softness, I feel like, and this is why we've had this like really recent kind of trying to recoup situationists and the derive and all this kind of stuff, is because the softness of cities has kind of come to the fore, you know, and it's interesting that I feel like the softness of cities has come to the fore, that we still go back to these kind of strategies of like, let's look at another and figure out how they saw it in order to deal with this softness of cities. You know, let's place that softness on the perceptual differences as opposed to placing that softness on the fact that cities themselves are porous.
I'd say the Tibetan monks, I wouldn't say that the intention was like the other, as it was like, this was a population that has grown up, or like have lived their entire lives in like a higher, you know, altitude. And that was the whole point, to be far away from, you know, not as much of a gravitational pull. I mean, how would you analyze them without labeling them as an other?
Well, was that the point of the thing? Was to find
a
group of people without without the same gravitational pull?
That was a theory of it.
But the point of it was to examine the kind of perceptual difference of this other population.
Well,
it wasn't
a perceptual difference.
I haven't read this study.
Professor Presti, he thought that people, Buddhist monks in particular, because of the like large amount of meditation that they do every day, noticed a link between like physiologically what they're able to control with their mind. So they could, for example, slow their heart down to just like not even beating, or lower their blood pressure drastically just by meditating. And so he wanted to study what in the brain was making that possible.
Mm.
And then this was the theory that was a byproduct. And this is not like a full-fledged theory. He hasn't published this at all. This is like a private conjecture that he
mentioned
in a lecture once.
You know, and I'm not against.
No, I think what you're highlighting is 100% in line with Said's theory of Orientalism. Like,
yeah, it's just.
what the hegemonic white male or whatever like needs the other to define itself by, right?
And that's the general sense that I was getting from the article. It's just that it was in line with that. Like, take, you know, it's that kind of the same kind of flaw that, let's say, Benedict Anderson has, where he, you know, notes the kind of porousness of nation, and then all of a sudden, like, falls back on, like, really concrete Marxist ideals.
Is it a flaw, though? Because I wouldn't label it a flaw. I would just say it's a mechanism that we should understand, like, how it works.
Okay, I mean...
Because I feel like we study ourselves as well.
Right,
know?
Right.
I think the nature of language inherently, like, leads to a process of otherness. I mean,
That's a classic, like, post-structuralist point of view.
It polarizes, I mean, any sort of, you know, use of nouns or pronouns or anything. Like, creating that dichotomy is inherent in most of these studies, but I don't think, especially what an article the French psychiatrist was going after, was trying to, in many ways, break down that polarization instead of looking at these autistic children as something that, and especially within a modernist point of view, needed to be sort of analyzed and diagnosed and sort of cured in a way. He tried to, you know, through this tracing method and watching their own sort of patterns of movement and sort of everyday dispositions to create, you know, or not create, but, you know, create a bridge that they could somehow like understand, sort of get an idea of sort of a perceptual realm that they lived in and appreciate that in a way. But it wasn't about, and at the same time, you know, he's talking about it as a signifier of like a deeper ontological being, but at the same time it's one that you're never going to be able to sort of staple down. And I think that's like one thing that I, you know, thought was good about it. It was his like tracing method was that it wasn't about nailing someone down or sort of, you know, diagnosing them, but trying to rather evoke a common space where they could, you know, create a space of understanding of, like, sort of a different perceptual realm that they lived in. But sort of that process of, you know, describing someone in intent, and that doesn't necessarily always to, you know, sort of polarize between them. But in this case, you know, he's trying to sort of, you know, in this whole article, like, create this common ground in a strange way through the tracing. Whether he's successful or not is very open to debate, but, you know, intent is slightly different.
I think your point is well taken, though, you know, that we should understand, like, how this mechanism is working in the article, or how the example functions.
I hear what you're saying about him trying to find this common ground. I kind of question what I like what you're saying in terms of that he acknowledges that there is a kind of a limit to that will never be kind of crossed. I like, and that is what I like about it. What I like about his process is the sense that he's not fully going to do it. The inherent and acknowledged limits. I still think that the process of kind of mapping that he's using, the kind of cartographic model, is limited in and of itself, just by the nature of its, like, that, and that there are alternative models. That's what I'm saying. Like, you're saying that the nature of language is necessarily othering, blah, blah, blah. I think that there are alternative cartographic models that I think are interesting to me as well.
Well, I think trace is a lot more interesting as an action than as, like, a product. This idea of, like, paying intense kind of, like, attention to something else, right? And not trying to explain it. He calls it what, like a seeing which is not related to thinking, and gaze which does not reflect.
Process rather than a result.
Exactly. He does draw these conclusions that these people are following, you know, that the autistic kids are following kind of like waterways and stuff in the yard, which is kind of like where you cut off and he starts describing them. And it's not tracing anymore, it's like inscribing a meaning onto them. But the whole idea of like of trace as itself is kind of interesting. And I think he is shooting for something passive and trying to describe something in its own terms. He doesn't get there, you know, but it's kind of an interesting concept to just kind of, when you talk about like there are alternatives, right? I mean, it seems like that is a pretty, I don't know.
Especially for this guy who's probably in the face of a ton of criticism.
Yeah.
You know, were actually, you know, trying to step outside of like an institutional, you know, practices that, you know, were generally held for kids, autistic kids were labeled as, you know, having problems, you know, and that needed to be rectified, you know, rather than trying to. I think he was an interesting first step, but obviously still not completely there.